government officials and the staff. I think we must start now. Welcome everybody, honorable members of the committee, the department led by the acting DG, the staff from the Ministry of the Public Enterprise, the staff in the portfolio committee. We all welcome. I think this is our first portfolio committee meeting. We will be having a quarter three performance report by the Department of Public Enterprise. But first we need to get some apologies. There are a list of apologies, including the non-availability of the Minister and the Deputy Minister due to the Cabinet. But I think you will take us through, Secretary.
Okay, Chair. Good morning. The apologies I've received is for Ms. Chabalala, Mr. Butelezi, Mr. Kwankwa, and Ms. Piri. And the ones that the Chair has noted of the Minister and the Deputy Minister to do Cabinet commitments here.
But I need also to indicate that the Honourable Trudy Shabalal was unfortunately involved in a very serious hijack problem, and her car is not yet established, still somewhere with the thieves, and she was also with the family. In fact, they were taken with the members of the family who were in the car. I think she's still undergoing that trauma. It's not something happened some time ago, it just happened recently, I think a day before yesterday. A new thing. I think as a young woman is still enduring that particular trauma. Our prayers and wishes are with her. We hope her to speedily recover. Honourable,
I just wanted to give Honourable Marie's apologies.
Oh.
And Honourable Philip Chalia. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable. You ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Please take us through.
Yeah, good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members. I'm accompanied by senior officials from the department. So at various stages of the presentation, I'm going to ask some of them to pitch in and assist. And Happy New Year to the committee as well.
Thank you.
Chair, our presentation is in three parts. We are going to speak to the performance of the department in quarter three, and we're also going to speak to the SOEs in two parts, in terms of their operational performance as well as their financial performance. In summary, the department's performance in quarter three is sitting at 59% of our KPAs were achieved. That is in relation to the 80% that we normally would like to get to at the end of the year. We still are positive that we can get close to the 80% by the end of quarter four. If we go on to the next slide, that shows the performance per unit. There are areas in the department that we need to put a little bit more effort into. I think business enhancement systems which looks after our socio-economic programs is quite glaring in terms of its performance throughout the year. And also the two core areas of our department, energy and resources, as well as transport and defense, we'd also like to get our performance up there. If we go on to the next slides, Chair, we'll mainly speak to the ones where we have not achieved. So slide 4 and 5, those have been achieved. Slide 7, the risk integrity framework. We are slightly behind with that particular project. What we are seeking to do here, Chair, is develop an integrity management framework for SOEs. Originally, this was intended to be an open tender, but due to the sensitivity of the work and also the need to keep the work within government, we opted to go with GTEC, which is an agency of the department, or rather of the National Treasury. So we contracted a bit late there, but the team is under direction basically to say we need to finish the work before the end of this financial year. If we go on to slide 8, we see that our SOEs undertake CSI work, and we monitor that to just ensure its effectiveness and also to ensure that it is protecting their license to operate by targeting communities which are close to their operations. The work was done, but the report was not submitted on time. So on that basis, it ended up being red, but the work has been done there. The socio-economic impact work, that's where now we want to have cover the socio-economic impact of these programs over a longer period of time, just get a sense of a scientific study as to whether we have made any good progress in the time that the mandate has been spent over the years. That work we should conclude it in the next financial year. The service provider has been appointed. That was rather late as well. The localization framework on slide 9, that work, what we're seeking to do there is obviously to leverage our SOEs to ensure that more of their procurement spend is spent locally. That work will be completed in this financial year. We are doing it internally. We have not had good success in terms of getting a cost-effective bid. I mean, we had budgeted about 2 million rands for the work, and the bid that we got was about 9 million rands. So we said, no, it would be not make sense to continue that work with an external service provider. On slide 11, Chair, the shoulder compact for 2021, the slide, we normally aim to conclude this at the AGMs. We have not been able to achieve that for the simple reason that we are also seeking to ensure that the shoulder compact starts really to talk to the key issues of the SOEs. And that review is continuing, and we should conclude that work in the next coming weeks in terms of getting them approved. There are some that where the boards, for instance, have requested reviews of the targets. But that work we're hoping to conclude it soon. Slide 11. On slide 13, the optimal structure that for Alexco, really the drive there is we need to consolidate what were Johannesburg-based operations with the ones in Drachtersveld, because the Johannesburg operations have become just a cash drain on the rest of Alexco. But as we'll detail later on, Alexco has serious issues as well. So administrator has been tasked to to provide a solution for us on the board. On slide 15, we've spoken about the shoulder compacts. These ones are as they relate to transport and defense. And then if you move on to slide 17, this is that we have a unit in the department, economic modeling. They have a model that they maintain to basically look at the multiplier effects of our projects, mainly capital programs, to say whether, you know, the money is being that is being spent, what is it having in the local economy. The team would ordinarily disappear for some time into these far-flung locations, but we said, man, we have to do things differently now. They must do a desktop-based study. They can be able to pull the data that they need and do the work from the office. So that's just a slight change in how they do the work that we have made there. Going into the financial performance of the department, if we go look at the appropriation versus actual expenditure, the first two columns, or the first column number two and three, rather, from the left hand side, you can just concentrate on those. We'll see in program one, overall, we spend about 110 million versus the 163 that has been allocated. The compensation of employees is a big gap there. It's an area that we need to address in terms of just appointments that are long overdue. Goods and services, like for instance the SOE bill, where the contracting thereof is located in this program, that has been the major contributor to underspending there. We have had challenges there in terms of getting the identified service provider on board. SOC governance and assurance, there's a big underspend there with regard to compensation of employees as well. That's an area that needs attention pretty soon. That's obviously reflected by the number of actings that we have on our side here. Program 3, we have a similar challenge on goods and services. There's a huge underspending there as well. I've spoken to some of the challenges, for instance, with supply chain that we have had. So some of the money will not be able to flow in this year. That's slide 19. And that on slide 20, it just gives the expenditure per classification compensation of employees. You can see quite starkly summarized there. We spent 112 million versus 170 million, end of quarter three, so we should end about 150 million by the end of the financial year, so we'll be about 20 million times behind. The goods and services, we'll be also 40 million times behind for the reasons that I've already spoken to. So overall, you can see that we are about 100 million rands behind versus the end of the financial year target of 283 million rands. So, yeah. And then slide 21 is just a summary of the expenditure. It's most of the money that went through our department was transfers to the SOCs. ESCOM obviously got a big chunk of it, and then if you go to bullet number 3, you will see that SAA got about 5.5 billion out of the MTBPS, DINEA got about 1.8, and S-Express got about 300 million rands. Then as we move on, Chair, we get to, from slide 23, these are SOC's operational performance. Bandan, can you take us through the name?
Thank you, ADG, and thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to present on the name. The the performance of Danel for the year is quite unsatisfactory, so to speak. Currently, the revenue is behind by almost 40% of their budget, or from their corporate plan. They are lagging behind by almost 40%, and is the snowball effect. The reason for this challenge is the snowball effect of liquidity challenge that the business experienced, where it could not operate optimally almost throughout the financial year to date. You'd recall that they received the recapitalization in August, September, and prior to that, almost all business units were at a standstill. So the catch-up has been very slow, because the impact of that is that you have suppliers now who were no longer willing to provide inputs to Danel, some demanding prepayment before they could supply the business. So that has had a significant impact on the operations of the company. So if you look at profitability as well, so obviously profitability will be affected because you're not making any money on the top line, but you have got this huge fixed cost that you must maintain in terms of the people. So effectively, Danel was not making money at the top level. So it means from revenue to your gross profit, the company was not making money. So you can expect that the losses will be quite significant come end of the financial year. So those are the challenges facing Danel. I think the reasons are stated there as to what are the main drivers in terms of the performance of the business to date. So the losses are expected to be significant come end of the financial year. The issue of liquidity, the 1.8 billion may not have solved all the liquidity challenges facing the business. You recall that the business requested 2.8 billion, they got 1.8 billion. So effectively, they did not get the recap as requested in full. So we're expecting that the solvency position of the business will also be under stress come end of the financial year. So the going concern challenges will be an issue in the next financial year. Because if you look at all the business units, the small ones and the big ones, none has achieved its target. So this is a significant challenge facing the entity. So if you look at the shareholder compact, so the shareholder compact will give you a sense of what's happening in the business. Liquidity challenge, the liquidity is in the 1.8 billion. We said to them, you need to use that to pay at least 50% of your creditors, because Danel depends largely on local suppliers. And when you have a distressed Danel, you have got distressed local suppliers. At some point, Danel owed suppliers close to R1 billion. So there were, some depend on Danel for business. So if you owe suppliers R1 billion, that depend on you. There will be distress. So we said to them, from the injection, use at least 50. Use that money to set at least 50% of your creditors. That was the call from the shareholder. So they have achieved that. They have managed to reduce that creditors bill significantly. But the level of trust like I said, the level of trust, the companies are like, before we supply with anything, show us the money. And it, and that strains the business. It means now you can't, you have to pay on delivery. So you can't deploy the money for, you can't leverage your resources to achieve other objectives. So cash generated from operations, it's negative because this the operational activities are suboptimal across the business. So the cash generated from operations is quite significantly low, and the profitability will be affected because you're not making money, but you're incurring huge costs. Operational excellence, all that is going to be affected by your relationship with suppliers. If your suppliers are not supplying you with the spare part, it means you won't deliver whatever you need to deliver on time. So the operational excellence, because the, here we're using the international benchmark that says in defense, if you have achieved 75% of your milestones, that's a significant achievement. So we have used that as a benchmark. So they are still performing below the international benchmark. The environmental impact, I think this should be achieved at the end of the financial year because we said just align your environmental policies with that of the department. So we are certain that this can be achieved. It's just an update of the policy. So every time I present on Denel, because it sounds doom and gloom every time, but the message is there are still pockets of excellence in the business that we can all take pride when we look at them. I mean, the demonstrations last week in Limpopo, most of the capabilities that were on demonstration there are mainly Denel capabilities. You look at the vehicles, you look at the aircraft that were used there, just to showcase the projection, the power projection of the country. Denel has a significant role to play there. So in 2019, for example, the Denel has managed to qualify the missile, the ADATA missile, the short-range air-to-air missile. It's one of the complex missile systems. It's the fifth generation. It means that it's the latest generation. They have managed to qualify it. It means now the missile is ready for sale. Anyone who wants it and qualifies to have it can have it now. It's one of the complex systems. So they've managed to get that ready. They were also in 2019, they were also confirmed as having the longest artillery range in the world. So those are capabilities that we have. So the issue of funding for these capabilities will tell us whether we'll maintain our position in the world, or we'll maintain these pockets of excellence. Because if you look at technology-based industries, it's mainly the people that are important in maintaining the capability. So if you're not if you're not creating certainty about the future of the business, you're more likely to lose most of your people, the critical people. If the issue of liquidity, what is our future, is not properly communicated, The challenge of facing the rail will continue. We have the Egypt contract. Look, there they were competing with global companies, French and German companies. The rail was able to get the contract. I mean, yesterday I read something from Pakistan looking to work with the rail on a range of capabilities, because they realize that there's excellence in the business, but the future needs to be defined carefully. I think I'm done.
Father, thank you, Bangan. As you can see, Bangan is quite passionate about the man. I think they have been in a much worse situation than they find themselves in now. And to a large extent, in the last financial aid operations, really ground to a whole shoot liquidity issues. Now things are starting to ramp up. We have a full executive team there, which is, I think, a rarity amongst our entities. SAA, we all know it's currently under business rescue. It's since the 6th of December last year. The team appeared at the joint session of the portfolio committee as well as SCOPA. They didn't get to say much, but at least we know that they exist. They were physically there. And the challenge now that we are busy with, Chair, is that is to ensure that the business rescue plan for the business is finalized. We have in the next coming week that should be finalized. That should tell us, for instance, how much additional funding will be required to get the business to be sustainable going forward. It will tell us how the airline is going to look like in terms of what routes it will be operating, what kind of aircraft will it be deploying, the size of the organization. That's the information that will come through. So what we are seeing here is really the lead up to the business rescue. And as you can see, the situation was not good. On the domestic front, the performance speaks for itself in terms of the profit. Is at a gross profit level. If you just include the direct costs, we can see that the routes were not doing well at all. As you can see, even the Cape Town routes came down to it was on a downward trend to about 50 million rand direct. We have not even included the indirect costs, the overhead costs from 49. Port Elizabeth got worse. East London is deeply in the red, so is Durban. And of course, in the quarter three last year, we also had, for instance, the strike that happened in the airline that did not do well in terms of building confidence in the airlines. And I feel revenue starts to disappear due to the kind of issues that developed there, then we end up the situation. So on slide 30, that's just on the regional route front. As you can see there as well, the trend was in the negative direction across all the routes. So I think the picture speaks for itself. Harare is shown there as positive from 115 to 83, but you know the challenges of repatriating revenues from Zimbabwe. Luanda is also one of the highlights on there. And then we'll go to the next slide, 31, that covers the international route network. As you can see, the only positive there is the Accra route, the Accra to Washington route, that has actually improved in performance. We have JFK now, where we fly in the A350-900 to JFK from Johannesburg. There's a comment there that we need to monitor its impact going forward. Slide 32 is just a duplicate of slide 31. Apologies about that. In a nutshell, Chair, is we need to get a point that these networks, it's a route network. One route, we can lose money on this side, but the second leg of that customer is actually profitable. So, we had a discussion with one of the leading airline executives on the continent, and he was saying, if you use the same strategy, he'd close 70% of his routes. Because he says that the trick is that you lose a little bit here, obviously don't lose too much money, but that loss also enables other routes to be profitable. So So that's the kind of learnings that we hope the BRPs, as they redesign the airline, will reflect in their business rescue plan. On slide 33, we speak about the subsidiaries. SA Tinkal is a problem. The performance there has not been great at all, and it's impacting the airline brands as a whole, including Mango, as we'll just indicate now. That business needs to be improved. There's a comment there to say the CEO will fix the business, but we know that one person cannot fix a business. The culture that has taken root in the business is a problem. Comair, due to some of the challenges there, has had to take the aircraft elsewhere. We have Lufthansa Technique that is now set up in the country, and they are bound to take work away from SAA. So that's one of the problems that you've created for yourself. Airships, it's a business that hopefully a solution will come through from the business rescue practitioners that will make sure that is sustainable. It's a business that was started with FedEx quite a while back. SAA has ended up being a sole shareholder, and maybe that's what it needs going forward. We need to bring in some private sector expertise and management know-how to get that business up and about, because the demand for the kind of services that they offer that goes beyond the airlines industry. Mango, due to the problems of SAA, including SAA Tinkal, that's on slide 34, has had on-time and reliability challenges, and that impacts on the brand, because the low-cost airlines are operated on the basis of quick turnarounds, running fairly high occupancy rates or load factors, as it's called in the industry. So if you're not achieving those because you have very thin margins, you're bound to start seeing profits going away. So that's what Mango finds itself in. Express has, which is left on slide 35, has found itself in business rescue as well, involuntarily so. One of the service providers took the entity to court for not paying its obligations, and they were able to get the court to place the business into business rescue. Yesterday we had a meeting with the business rescue practitioners. We're finding a way to work together to ensure that this airline can be saved. I must say it's found itself in a much deeper hole despite its small size than SAA, but we'll see what we can do here. And as you can see, the same applies. If you look at slide 36, Chair, the first block per route, that's the actuals that have been achieved. And you can see those green lines, when you look at the actuals, are pointing down regard to domestic routes. So things are not looking good on that side. Competition has also been quite fierce, especially from Air Link, which just so happens to be a franchise holder of SAA as well. On slide 37, we look at the regional routes as well. The lines are also pointing in the wrong direction. They are loss-making as well. The airline has also found itself in a situation where it's supposed to be operating 15 aircraft, but they've only been able to place 5 aircraft on the line. And those that have tried to fly with SAA, where they've seen that delays and flight cancellations are the order of the day. And that has led to customers voting with their feet and leaving the airline. On the 39, that Transnet remains a profitable business, Chair. The operational performance of the business is starting to give us worries. The positive is now it has a permanent CEO. We're hoping that the board will move even faster to ensure all the key executive positions are filled across at the group, so there can be a better attention to the operational performance of the business. The shareholder company performance on 39 is quite clear. It's pointing in the wrong direction. You have about 82% of the targets being achieved in quarter three. And so if we'll cover the core business just now. Even the financial is not looking great. If you go on to slide number 40, that's just a graphical representation of the deterioration that we've spoken about. On slide 41, as you can see there, that the shareholder compact target is the second column on the right, and the actuals for quarter three are reflected there on the fifth column. But what you have there is our projection in color is a projection to the end of the year where we are likely to finish. As you can see, there's quite a lot more red than what we'd like to see there. The pipeline is the only one in green, and this is not. I mean, we at some point we had set ourselves a target in terms of total rail volumes to be, I think, it's about 330 megatons that we're aiming for. But we will be. That was for the last MTSF period. We're seeing a 234 by the end of this financial year. The picture is not, and it has a direct impact, obviously, on the economic performance. If we go on to the next slides, Chair. Then, on slide 42, is just the narrative with regard to the rail performance. It says that there's market share loss to competitors has been a challenge, and it will become a challenge if you are seeing the kind of performance that you have just seen. Poor maintenance of infrastructure. The Johannesburg Durban line has had speed restrictions as a result. We have had washaways of networks, obviously, with the rains that we have had. Obviously, the economic performance also will have a direct impact on the performance of the rail business, just to its direct correlation to the state of the economy. When we go to port efficiency, Chair, anyone who has been to the port of Durban recently, anyone from Durban knows the challenges there, and they are a direct result of some of the what we'll be sharing with you now. On slide 43, for instance, the Durban Pier 1, it's worst performer there, and you can see it when you go looking at the trucks clogging up that part of Durban because of the inability to process them faster. And that is graphically represented on on slide 44 and 45, Chair. You see them across, we look at the ship turnaround times. Quarter three actual, the higher the number is, the worse the performance is versus the shareholder compact target. You look at the waiting time before they come into port for the ships, it's all negative. If you look at the Durban, there should be negative 164, negative 140. So the picture is not looking great. If you look at the cranes as well, performance on slide 45 is also all negative. We are not meeting the targets that we have set them. So it's not an encouraging picture that we have, and we're hoping that the CEO and her management team will start to pay particular focus to these challenges that we are sketching out here. And Chad, if you look at where Durban Port, which used to be the premier port on the continent, is sitting at, in fact, in December we were at Durban Port and we thought we were still number 3, we're no longer number 3, we've fallen all the way down, I think we're about number 13 on the continent. So the other ports, the shipping companies are choosing to go to Mombasa, for instance, Walvis Bay, Beira now in Mozambique is also being preferred because of quicker turnarounds of the ship, because the more the ship has to be carrying cargo and moving, if it is standing, it's losing money. So that's one of the areas that really it's an area of great concern. And really on slide 46, we're just emphasizing the point that you have just made now. we're trying to diagnose on slide 47 why we have the problem we have, the reliability of port terminal equipment, and check the corruption has also been a major cause there. You know, when equipment are bought because people can get bigger kickbacks, you end up in this situation. Shortage of resources, including optimal gang deployment. There's we met the organized labor there as well. They had quite a litany of issues that they raised with us. So, whether we can accept it to a certain extent, but it's our way that we live with it. Because people can argue also the extreme weather events will have a bigger impact. I think the management to a large extent has been the major contributor. I'm not going to talk to the other points. I think we have made them there. And then slide 49, Eskom, if Makgola can just take us through those.
Morning, Chair. On Eskom, in terms of the shareholder compact, there are four key areas that we look at or that we contract with Eskom, which is financial performance, operational and environmental performance, new build, and the socio-economic impact. So as you can see in the last quarter, Eskom's generation performance has decreased sharply, as evidenced by the significant load shedding that we've had since November, plus the stage 6 load shedding that we had in December. The decline in EAF is mainly due to the poor reliability of plants that have led to breakdowns going over 16,000-17,000 megawatts in December. The network performance, which is mostly the distribution and the transmission performance, has also deteriorated. This is based on the fact that the level of switching that we are now doing as a result of the load shedding is also impacting the life of the infrastructure that we have on the transmission and distribution. So we'll see the impact of the load shedding on the network over the short to medium term, and we would need to reinvest in that in those assets in order for them to sustain the level of switching that we are currently having to do in order to implement the load shedding. We've seen the load shedding also have a significant impact in terms of Eskom sales, because as they load shed, it means they sell less electricity. The sales have been on a downward decline for the last decade, since 2007 to where we are, and it is a concern going forward in terms of getting Eskom in the downward spiral in terms of sales going down, which leads to higher tariffs and, you know, subsequently having a putting Eskom into what we call the utility death spiral because of that. The third issue is around the municipal debt, which has continued to decline. We actually saw some improvement in the Soweto collection over the last quarter. That changed from about 10%. So Soweto debt payment levels are about 10%. But in the period between September and December, Eskom actually intensified the level of collections in Soweto through disconnections, and we've seen the improvement go up to 20%. But the impact of that is the protests that we've seen coming out of Soweto, because on top of the load shedding that Soweto experiences, there is additional disconnections that Eskom has been levying on Soweto in order to improve the collections and to implement the prepaid system. The further impact on some of the matrices that we see improving on the financial would be due to the government support that government is providing to Eskom. To date, we have given Eskom 30 billion rand out of the 49 billion that we need to give them before the end of March for the current year, and then the 56 billion next year and 33 billion in the subsequent year. Government is still to make a decision around the fundamental debt solution. We've seen some improvement in terms of cost saving. However, this is being deteriorated by the high utilization of the diesel plants, which are quite expensive for Eskom to run. On the restructuring side, we've seen some progress with implementation of the restructuring in terms of the Eskom committing to producing profit and loss statements by the end of this year. But the legal unbundling is still to commence, ESCOM has committed to appointing subsidiary level boards at the end of this month and the relevant CEOs in order to start creating that separation in the business in order to increase visibility and to increase accountability. I think the last point on the operational performance, they have provided a response plan that they will be implementing to in order to deal with the load shedding, but the prognosis at this point is that it will take a considerable amount of time to fix ESCOM's plant and to bring the plant availability to acceptable levels. Government is committing to finding short-term measures to close the energy gap as we have it and as per the measures that have been announced by the Minister of Mineral Resources and Energy. But on the overall, in terms of ESCOM's performance, the projection for year-end is that in terms of the shareholder compacts, they will only achieve about 50 to 55% of the KPIs that we have agreed with. Okay. In terms of Alexco, members would recall that the department had instituted an investigation into Alexco and the PSJV, and the report was finalized around July, August last year. Out of that process, there was a decision made to place Alexco under, to appoint an administrator at Alexco and to relieve the board that was there at the time. The administrator has been appointed for a period of 6 months, which will end at the end of March. And part of the scope that has been provided to the administrator is to review the governance arrangement between Alexco and the PSJV, because at the moment as a shareholder we have very limited insights into the PSJV, and yet we are expected to provide funding in terms of sustaining the operations. We have seen significant decline in the performance of the PSJV itself, and the report also did raise some concerning issues around the arrangement. I think, DG, I can say that the CEO has been placed on suspension of the PSJV while an investigation is being completed. But where we are now, government has to make a decision around the appropriate way to house the mining rights, the marine mining rights that the government owns, and whether in the current PSJV we are getting significant profits, and whether the communities in the PSJV are actually benefiting to the extent that the joint venture was meant to benefit both parties. So we expect the final report from the administrator at the end of this month, actually, and to provide a proposal to government around what would be the appropriate way to house the marine rights going forward.
Right. Thank you, Makhula. Chair, Safcol is one business, as we say, is not causing us problems. It's able to take care of itself, but it can definitely perform much better. In quarter 3, slide 58, you can see that the number of targets that are not achieved is actually pointing in the wrong direction. So that, and if you go into from slide 59 into the shareholder compact itself, we can see that the Mozambican operations require a bit of attention, and the unplanted areas are a bit up compared to the target of 5.0, the target for quarter three was just over 5%, that's 7%. It's supposed to be planting the new area in Sofala, about 1,000 hectares at the time. They are falling behind on that one, or they've fallen behind on that one. There's a glimmer of hope in terms of timber dollar and Iflam on the next slide 60. The reinvestment into timber dollar, which is their sawmill up in Venda. They've been doing studies there, and they've gotten to a point where they have a bankable business case approved. the Section 54 process has been concluded, so they must just get on with it in terms of investing in that. The further project as well, that is in Ifloma, they need to get a partner to get that going. The board has approved an implementation plan there. On 61, there's not really much to say there. At least the people are not doing damage to people in terms of killing them, at least. Though, obviously, they would like to see the injury frequency rate also coming a little bit more under control, considering there were 9 disabling injuries during the quarter. On slide 63, which is the social side of the work we expect them to do, they are behind there in terms of the spend on corporate social investment. They have a target of 7.5 million rands, so they're a bit behind on that one. That is important considering that some of the plantations that they're operating on are under land claims. So we encourage them to develop that relationship with the community such that when the land claims are eventually handed over, or they are concluded and the land is handed over, that the communities will prefer Safcol as their partner on in terms of forestry operations. On slide 63, they are still performing relatively well in terms of trainings and we can see the spend is on training also can rather improve a bit. Chair, slide, we finish with the, so in terms of operational performance, slide 65 is just the end of 2018-19 financial year performance. You can see that the picture is not looking good there. From slide 67, we now go into the quarter itself. You can see it for the reasons that Bangani spoke to earlier. In the quarter, they realized 1.3 billion rands loss. The fixed cost structure is high because you're not enough products going out the gate. So that's where we need to get them to, so that then that operational revenues can start to be able to afford the fixed cost structure. On slide 67, we go on the financial position of Denel. The debt has come down quite significantly, obviously, with the cash injection that they got. They were able to manage that, as Bangani has indicated. Eskom, now we're talking billions now. You can see that the net profit for the quarter is sitting at about negative 6.2 billion. That's still a work in progress, though, as we've seen from the allocations over the MTF period, that they will rely on government for quite a while to get them out of the position that they find themselves in. And on the position, on 69's financial position has marginally improved in the quarter, because the disbursements have helped a great deal. There's about 14 billion rands of redemptions that are due in this period, and the projection for the end of the year in terms of the debt is 455 billion rands. Yeah, so that's on the positive side, they've been able to raise about 31 billion the 46 billion borrowings that they needed to make. And Transnet financial performance, as we said, it remains positive, but obviously the operational performance is quite worrying on our side. So as you can see, also in the financial position 71, they are still looking relatively good. Safcol, the financial performance, the net profit is worrying at 194. Million rands. On 73, the positive thing we can take out of that is they don't have any debt on their balance sheet. But also it's a sign of a lazy balance sheet. So that's why we are forcing them to get to the investments where they can process more of their solar and hopefully make a little bit more money, and hopefully someday they'll pay a dividend to government. Alex Go, the situation is quite dismal. They are currently under administration. We do not have the quarter three results. The CFO resigned, Chair, which is still with a temporary CFO there. So, and what we can also say is that the Joseph Corporation had been dependent on the funding that we had allocated in 2012-2013. The living off the interest of the funding that we put in there for, amongst others, rehabilitation of the mine, as well as some of the obligations for previous employees, like on medical aid and so on. Those funds are running out. They have the last 17 million rands. So that's why we need this. That's why we said we don't need a board, we need an administrator who can mop up the Johannesburg operations and relocate the business in Doctor's Fund. So that's unfortunately progress has also not been great there. On 77, that's, we know that entity is under business rescue, that's why we don't have the numbers there. But we have re-emphasized the business rescue practitioners that the business remains a state-owned business. The minister remains the executive authority. Minister still has to account for the business in terms of the PFM as much as under business rescue. So those reports, we should see them starting to come through. Express, as we have indicated, also finds itself in the same situation. Chair, that's the end of our presentation. I have the colleagues here will help the questions.
Yeah, that was long. but it's all the entities, including the department. Honourable members, I think it's your turn now to ask those uncomfortable questions. And questions are not supposed to be comfortable. if you need to have a clear picture of what is happening. I will start with you, Mkwanazi, and followed by my honourable Honourable Manzi. I like that. Yeah, Waters, followed by Honourable Malinga, Kumede, Dlamini, Akolingi. Thanks, Honourable Mkwanazi.
Thanks, Chair. Happy New Year. Chair, thank you very much for the presentation. I hear my colleagues are saying it's very long and very depressing. I have a few questions, Chair, but Chair, I must also indicate that I know that maybe some of the questions will be relevant if the executive is here, but I'm banking on the program, on the meeting that is on the program that was adopted last week, that's the 18th to 20 March. So if we can make sure, Chair, using your authority, that the executive be here so that some of the questions stroke politically will be answered to them. On the issue of debt quarter performance, report performance on the program two, my understanding is that the department is responsible to make sure that the SOEs are financially sustainable and able to deliver on the government strategies objectives. So in doing that, can I check, Chair, the cost drivers on the program too? Is the department, can the department justify those cost drivers? And what will be the benefits going forward? Chair, on two things that I think we need to bring it to the meeting that I've mentioned before is the issue of vacancies. I think we need to note it is very worrying. Sitting here since I arrived in this portfolio committee, we talk about vacancies and we talk about acting positions. For me, it is very worrying. And what are we saying? What will be the time frame to finalize that? What is the progress on the program of doing that? Together with the issue of a shareholders management bill, I know there's a paper, I know there's a process, but I think as this committee playing our oversight, we need to be placed on ease on the issue of that process and where is that process, whether we're continuing with that process or are we not. It is in the report on the program two. Can I also be taken to confidence about the department about the deed of settlement on the Richardsfeld community? I think I'm pronouncing that correct. Chair, on the issue of Eskom, I know Malinga, as a person, of course, the Honorable Malinga is also sitting at the Energy PC, will also agree with me to that. When are we seeing the roadmap? Chairperson, Nyazo Kusinalo, 18 months, but when are we seeing the roadmap? And I think that will empower us as this portfolio committee to play our oversight that so that we would be able to see who could see are we winning or are we, what is it that is doing the I think last two for me, Chair, will be on page 33, the SAA technical and the SAA air chefs. On the issue of the position that is being taken on repositioning and repurposing the SOEs, what is the program and the progress by the department on those two issues? I'm sure my colleague Honorable Dlamini will talk about the Transnet. It is a very disappointing a move on what we are seeing on Transnet. And what is it that what is it that the department is doing to make sure that we don't regress a further on that progress? Because to me, Transnet, when I came here to the portfolio committee, Transnet was my only hope, was my only was my only SOE that say in everything this has been doing, but there is so it's an issue. And lastly, I want to be taken through by the department on the performance of the administrator on this floor. Thank you. That should be my take for now, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Waters.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. As you know, it's my first committee meeting, and I'm actually quite depressed after hearing the presentation, to be honest. I knew things were bad, I didn't realize how bad they were. It was like someone reading out loud a horror story as you went through. No, it's shocking. And for me, Chair, every bailout for an SOE takes money away from education and health and the police. And a lot of them seem to be vanity projects that we don't actually need. For example, Denel, it's a vanity project. That money should be going to schooling and health, not for arm, in my view, Chair. So I'd just like to make that point, but I've got some questions that I'd like to ask about SAA. Now, I know they've received a $5.5 billion bailout from the state, and they got additional funding in January and December last year and January this year. But according to page 65 of the presentation, if you just go to page 65, it says that the loss for SAA, and I use inverted commas, was only $297 million. One has to wonder why they need such a big bailout if the loss is only, and I say only in inverted commas because it is a lot of money, $297 million. Why is that? And secondly, how do you know that is the loss when they haven't submitted their financials for, I think, 3 or 4 years? So where does this figure come from? How was it defined? And if you have the financials, why doesn't the portfolio committee have the financials? That's what I'd like to ask there. And then page 76, I've got a note here. Oh, I'd like to know, I know you mentioned it, I know SAA is under administration, but why aren't the figures for the third quarter available? Just because they're under administration doesn't mean that they can't report back to the portfolio committee. So I'd like quick clarity on that, please. Then as far as ESCOM is concerned, with the debt on page 52, it has increased, as you mentioned. And you talked about steps being taken in Soweto, and I don't know if I heard you right, you said payments are up to 20% only. You said, so it means 80% of people in Soweto are still not paying. What other steps have been taken to recoup the municipal loss? Because it all can't be from Soweto. I know Soweto is a big portion. I've read that in the papers. But there must be other municipalities that owe money. So what steps have been taken to recoup that money? Then on SA Express, again, on page 21, it states there that $300 million was given to them. Yet on page 65, again, as far as the financials are concerned, their loss is $590 million. But again, no financials have been forthcoming to the committee. So how did you determine that loss? And if you've seen the financials again, why haven't the committee? And when are they coming before the committee? Then on Denal, Chair, I mean, it got a $1.8 billion bailout last year, and on page 66, if you go to that, if I'm reading it correctly, the losses for the three quarters, are they cumulative? That would make it 2.7 billion rand loss this year alone, right? Plus we've got to put the fourth quarter in, if I'm reading it right, and if I haven't, I apologize up front. But the fact of the matter is, on page 27, you try and give an impression that Denal's actually doing fairly well. You know, they've got this contract, that contract's coming, etc., etc., Egypt, whatever. But the fact is, it's running at a loss, despite the fact that you're trying to make it look like a thriving entity on page 27. And here again, I say this is a vanity project that we don't need, quite frankly. So I just find it strange. And if I could ask the gentleman, Chair, given the three-quarter losses, what are we anticipating for the fourth quarter? What would the final deficit be for Denal at the end of the financial year? Then lastly, Chair, page 21, there was a total of 34.1 billion rand that was given to four entities from the government for bailouts or whatever. Can I ask what the projected bailouts will be for this year for the four entities? Please. Is it going to be more than the 34 billion? And if so, how much? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Kumede. Oh, Malina, sorry.
Angibonge slalo, ngibingelele kwi department. Thank you for a very depressing presentation. Chairperson, mine is common sense. When I'm listening here, the first presenter said, if Denal can be given, I think the 1 billion, that is a shortfall, because they requested 2.8 and the bailout was 1.8 billion. It can do better, given the slide that Umanzi asisayithayo lapha and the examples that our colleague from the department cited, Maba Veza, Lizindo Lapeli Mpompo. It means Denal can do well. It can make profit. So as the department, why are you not putting money on the SOEs that can make money than continue to throw money in the pit hole of ESCOM? Then Nizago ESCOM slash, are we gonna
come out of the situation at the ESCOM? Can the department just be honest? I know your officials, maybe your principals, sometimes I tried to be a teacher chair. Yes, Katsam Gimman. We go to any lesson plan all the students understand in the classroom. Whereas corner bang I grasp. Maybe the political principles, the idea, I cascade papans. What is the plan? I don't know how it's going to be clarified in terms of ESCOM. ESCOM, last I checked the chair, we were at 420 billion rand owed. ESCOM debt. And municipal debt is just a drop in the ocean. So you can't always come here as the department and say municipalities are not paying well, and municipalities it's a minor thing. And some of these municipalities, I'm from that space, Chair. We said ESCOM take your electricity. Abantu bawuthenga kimi, uESCOM akafuni. Why? Why is that happening? Why is that happening? Because you don't want to service the transformers, you don't want to service the infrastructure, and is changing board chairs yielding any results? Jabu resigned. Mr. Mabuza, okay, let me be professional. Mr. Mabuza resigned. The BRP person is in place. I will tell you, acting DG. Everybody who wants to come into this space wants to make money because they have seen that there is money to be made at the expense of the country. And I wouldn't plan from this BRP, ma'am. 3 months, man. Siyezwa kuthiwa kune lento eshiwo honorable Mkhwanazi. Mina nami ngiyibone ku presentation because ngaleka energy sihlalo siba nenkinga. You assist with the supply of energy in the country, but the entity that is supposed to supply energy or report to you does not report to you, reports somewhere else. So nina ni bamba nje la emphethweni. We were shown something that says roadmap to ESCOM. And the last time I checked, mina president ukhulume nge unbundling of ESCOM. Is that roadmap talking to that? Okay. So why is it not coming to the committee? 3 months now. And a business rescue practitioner, acting DG, acting on a credential zake. Which business has he or she rescued? Because uEskom akasafuni ukuthi sitamu sakhe size sizohlala la kuma boardroom chair. It's a serious crisis. And the community out there is saying, when we are going to have sauna or saw pass, there is no load shedding. When there is a budget speech, we make sure that there is no load shedding. You're saying, I saw one of the reports, that Lababan Taisela Malahle, their coal share or price has gone up. But you also go to diesel, which is expensive. What is the plan here? Because I achieve 32%, ya anticipator ukuthi nga achieve 54%. Isiqala March. Le 54 - 32 jabu bo teacher we maths bala lapho. Bo ithatha ngala mavika u4. I don't, you see, that is why I'm saying, Chair, I am reading this document, but I'm also applying my common sense. Common sense, that the department cannot just come with these fancy papers to us, babhali lisilunge sikhulu ngoba bazi ukuthi mhlawumbe okunye ngeke si understand. Tell us the truth. What is it that you want this committee to assist you with? You're going to watch us ungene emlonyeni. SAA, SAX, not yet finalized. They are not audited.
and akusinto yanamhlanje akusinto yayizolo akusinto ya kodwa lokusiqhumisele manje bona. You come here, you tell us good kunama roots that are not yielding any revenue. SAA and SAX, are they not one thing? If SAX kunama roots wayo anga yield I revenue, kunama roots SAA. Common sense logic. Ngenzeka. Angithi kunama board wonke umuntu uyadla lapha ngeke befuna ukuhlangana. Wonke umuntu ufuna ukuhlafuna. Umunye uzohlafuna kakhulu kuze kungahlafuna umkhwanazi, umkhwanazi athole ipisi encane. But sometimes you need to be tough. There are roots SAX eluza kuona, SAA eluza kuona. Why not combine the two? And say nina express, because tina siyavala su SAA, ama roots yo Durban to Cape Town, why SAX ingangeni kune space? And yet you're coming up with a plan to make money. Not just ulale nje ukuthi okay, I know ukuthi government is going to bail me out. Alex go. Hi Slal. Administrate. Nimuphe 6 months acting DG. Nabeka lo CEO obengenzi lutho. Benithi uzokwenzani? Ayimbeni mbeki. Lo CEO obengenzi next. Lapha ka Alex. Uselinyanga eyodwa manje. You telling us that the CEO has been suspended. This must be a joke. Ubenza impilo yalo ya administrator. Last when I was in this committee, that administrator told us I headache nayo la. But lo muntu beseloku ehleli lapha. But then you expect to have results. How come? So possible. Angeke umuntu oyifuna elapha phezulu avumele enye omunye umuntu ukusubmitha ngaphansi komunye umuntu. It's not possible. And the port chair sengivala because ngiyazi ukuthi uMadlamini la upassionate ngo Transnet. Vele nami ngafika la mama omkhwanazi uTransnet kuyo siphithemba. Yabo namhla ngidumele kakhulu nje kusho ukuthi vele kusana lutho ka public enterprise. If usekukholapse ngisho uTransnet. Lama ports slide 47, I think. Kunama breakdown. Kunama delays. Mara sifuna kwenza imali njalo. Supervision iphi? And I'm telling you, acting DG. Mhlawumbe ukuthi ngiyawazi ama-official because nami at some point ngeke ngaba i-official. Officials can cook a report. If you're not going there physically on the ground, you will come and present something that is not there. I'll cite an example, Chair. One time, one MEC was taken to a certain area, got to a Vuli clinic, all the logistics. My figure was told is ganga. Was told is ganga, ba. Gala ma report. So, there is no hope here. Yabona yaka Eskom khona in frustrating pela because everybody useyenza I political campaign because we are going to local government elections. Yabona yase Soweto. You disconnect people. Kwenziwa njalo vele. Mangabe nifuna ukuthola imali you disconnect people. Ithini plan yaka Eskom? Why give people ugesi ungena plan yokuthi uzowukhokhelwa kanjani? And if kukuthi these people cannot pay for this electricity, what is so difficult for Eskom ukuthi kube uyena oyidayiselela ugesi bantwini? Municipalities cannot afford it. Some municipalities are not collecting. And they go and make arrangements with Eskom. You know, iyini that yaka Eskom na bomasipala 80
million. Thanks, Honorable. Because we were dealing with Eskom from the beginning and you went to all other entities and now you are going back to Eskom. Okay. Can you conclude?
Same off.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry for that. That was not intended to do that. Honorable Lamin? Yeah, come Lamin.
Oh, thank you, Chair. The board, the chairperson, tell us a lot of things about the the mayor is going to do this and this and this, but now, instead of that, you got lost.
All the promises is gone. All the promises is gone that they are promising as the chairperson of the board. Or even the management. When we go there and then they come here to present to us, it's a lot of things we're supposed to be in the good standing now. In SAA, we got licenses all for those all routes that are not there anymore. What about our licenses that we have for that route to the international? And then why SAA cancelled the route for Johannesburg and Durban? Durban because it's a domestic, but that route is we're supposed to get a lot of money in Durban to Cape Town. And then SAA can't to rule that all the department and government to use SAA so that we can stabilize some the airline. That route and to Johannesburg, Durban and Cape Town, we got a lot of money. Look at the British Airways, they make a lot of money. Every day when we're traveling to with BA, it's full every time. Why don't SAA use that route? This tour is Johannesburg to Durban and Cape Town. On Transnet, Transnet, yeah, it is our hope. It was at that time. But now, today, we find it very difficult for. Maybe department can tell us about the causes of this poor, efficient performance. Because really, we lost hope. Because everything in this SSO is a loss. Loss. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Gumede?
No.
Thank
you
very
much. Yeah, that means yes. Okay. Now, Chair, Liabonga. Let me start perhaps with Dineo. You know, I just want to ask, it's a question that I would think it's more or less pertinent in the sense that perhaps challenges that are experienced within the NEL, is it a management issue relating to performance that some of the management or people inside perhaps the NEL can't perform perhaps to the expectation? Apart from that, is if we have a proactive management, out of the challenges they have, they ought to have come up with at least a strategy that in fact is aimed at improving the situation with Daniel. As perhaps the department is providing oversight, I don't think that they will have to wait until you ask them. The situation is, if the situation is bad, you will expect that the management will be proactive and come to you and say, out of these challenges, this is what we think could be the outcome. On SAA, you know, what I'm noticing is that we seem to have perhaps avoided isn't aiming on SAA. I'm confusing issues now. I'm definitely confusing issues. Che, let me go to Alexco. I'm confusing issue. I do have a very pertinent question here, right? In fact, my question was on Alexco. Is with the administrator, have you envisaged any improvement when the administrator was in place? Right? With ESCOM, we were given the turnaround strategy that the department was going to implement or employ in terms of improving the situation. I have a feeling that if there are any kind of other data from that turnover strategy, I just want to ask is, what could be the implications in terms of the split? Do we have any financial implications in terms of the split? What does, in fact, the plan envisage? I understand that you have been avoiding talking about the kind of a rescue situation in these instances. This is what now I'm saying, I'm confusing things. If the plan does not work, what could be the solution? Is government or parliament in a position thereafter to give bailouts in a situation of this nature? In terms of the plan, because I think we are in fact the people that could have employed these the rescuers. When is the plan due? Because I think on the other side, I'm thinking of there is now a competition between the department and the guys that are doing the rescuing. It may not be visible, but in a sense, there is a competition. You work because you want to achieve that, and they are also doing something that. In terms of the management, who do they take now the instruction from? From you as a department, or they take from the three guys that are doing the rescuing? Is the plan perhaps inclusive of Umango and Express? So let me stop there. Oh, the overall one. What could be the overall strategy for the department to rescue these SOEs? Because all here were lamenting, complaining that we are seeing the downward spiral. Then, as a department, is there anything that says, hey, if we can just do zoom, I sizodla kangcono. Mhlambe kuzoba ngcono lokho. But anyone who is a kuzana honorable Mkhwanazi as well as Malinga that side, they are very honest. Let's say it here openly. There are times if you act and act unlimitedly, it does affect you. It definitely does affect you. So it will be better that some of these things be finalized and be concluded. Chair, let me stop there. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable. Before I give you acting DG, I think here we are crippled by the absence of the shareholder. in terms of responding to the questions that Honorable Malinga, Waters, Kwanazi, and other members of this portfolio committee raised. But I think you will be in a position to give some green light to those that you are in a position to do. But I think centrally, when it comes to ESCOM, the central proposal that is cutting across from everybody in relation to ESCOM is the issue of roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
That for us to be able to do a meaningful oversight, especially in the light that ESCOM has, the new CEO has committed or told the nation that it's going to take 18 months to deal with the load shedding challenge. Therefore, we need a roadmap that is assisting us towards dealing with that, so that we can be in a position to play our role as the legislative arm of the state, who are having a responsibility to do oversight, so that we can advise and also weigh whether people are doing their work and there is a progress. We can be able to do that when there is some kind of a plan, a roadmap in front of us that we do A, B, C, including the unbundling process. We need that kind of a roadmap, which inclusive of achieving all those two, because I think the unbundling with the delay of load shedding are supposed to be interrelated in the process. Therefore, I think the members here are strong when it comes to the necessity of that roadmap. Secondly, is this concern about the Alexco CEO. She is traumatizing it, but I think she's on point, Honorable Malinga, on this matter. It was raised at some point in the presence of the CEO while there is an administrator. And the two coexisting in that entity might have a contributing factor on us first, because there was a forensic report that was supposed to be here by January, if I'm correct. And we have not yet been informed to what is happening in relation to it by now, and now it's February. And I think it's supposed to be tabled, so that we know what is happening there. And to me, if the person, it's difficult to judge whether this administrator has been in a position to execute his responsibility diligently, or he has failed, because we don't have his report, and we are speculating perhaps that the presence of the CEO might have undermined his efforts. We don't know. But I think the sooner we get the report of this administrator, the better. The sooner we are given that opportunity to see his progress, if there is any progress, we do away with him, also have somebody else to address your situation. If he is failing, we won't have a reason to keep him. He must go, because if the CEO was a factor, supposed to have picked that and raised it, you know, he never raised it with us. Thirdly, is the disappointment that we have all of us acknowledge when it comes to Transnet. We thought perhaps that Transnet is a living example, while there were, of course, other challenges, but we thought that is progressing, but there is a regression now. I think that we need to perhaps as a way forward, Secretary, to identify these areas that are reported in this report, so that we can go as a standing committee to educate ourselves closely there, and raise questions with those that are in charge in that particular area, you know, which is pulling a reverse gear on the progress in Transnet, and we deal with that as a committee. I think we need to get to that. We need to prepare ourselves to go and confront that situation. Otherwise, we won't be doing our work if we don't go there. So that they raise to us what is their problem, you know. The area which I think it was clearly presented to me is this Tinel issue. Yeah, I think we are also disappointed a bit there, because we had, though I think that the issue raised of the assistant that came, if I captured you very well, came a bit later and had an impact in the running. But also, there are issues that I think they have not been explained properly to us that still need to be accounted for. I remember this other way was, this other time it was, we heard on the media that there was some ordering of particular equipment, military equipment, that were not delivered by Dinel. Yes. And the perhaps we need an expert, because they might have also contributing factors on these problems that we have. I think when we met with Dinel, they were too positive. They gave us a very positive picture with optimism that the things are going toward. But now, it's not clear whether in the next financial year, not this one, we are going, in the next financial year, we might get better results. Or perhaps they will be also dependent to another financial ratio or what. I think we need to be clear that. I'm not the kind of person who is worried a lot about the taxpayer contributing to improve the situation in these state-owned enterprises. Well, the reality of the situation, they are in a mess due to the previous shenanigans, corruption and all that happened. Therefore, to just assume that there won't be an assistance from the state, and we're too worried about this, I don't think we will be helping unless we are profiting some kind of a, was to me, to use the quagmire we find ourselves in as a reason for privatizing or selling these entities. It's not helping the developmental vision that we have of the state. I don't think it's going to help us. Therefore, to me, I feel if there is a necessity to save from fiscal these, that has, it has to happen, you know, because even that education, that health we want, still it will have a problem if it's not getting support from a profit-making kind of TNL, a profit-making kind of, if they are run profitable, they will have positive consequences on the fiscals of the country, and will be able to spend on social services that are necessary for the majority of the poor in the country. Therefore, I'm saying we need to get facts properly, so that if there is a need to appeal to the Minister of Finance or to appeal for the assistance, we do so, you know. But we need to get facts first, so that we understand what are we talking about. Lastly, on the SAA, I think that's where the real problem is. The business ratio practitioners, perhaps the DDG for the legal one will help us here. I was listening when we had the joint meeting with the SCOPA, that they were not speaking the department speak on their behalf, and the shareholder was the person who's giving us everything about them. But I still need to understand their relationship with us, whether they are above us. You know, they cannot come and account on us as to what they are doing. We need to be clear about that. I was informed at some point that there is still even a legal opinion that needs to be acquired, whether even the shareholder can force them to account on what they are doing. You know, that's what I think we need to explain. If the shareholder also have to go and look for those technicalities, how far to us being it means that they can just do as they wish in the SAA, and if they decide tomorrow to just sell, it will be at their mercy. They can cut, flights everywhere, you know. And for whatever reason that is only known to them and those that they are counting to them, who are not necessarily us. We need to know that, because we have a serious questions to throw them. If they can come to us, they must come to us and explain. And I'm raising that DDG, because I was in that meeting, and it was really a bit awkward for us to see them. They are sitting here, and we've got questions to them, but the question has to be answered indirectly by somebody else. I wish you to help us on that, because we need those answers. There is money that has been, even if it's not coming from fiscals, that money come from the development through the Minister of Finance, you know, helping them. Therefore, there is no way that they cannot account to us if that is the case. There is money that they got, 3 billion, eh?
3 billion.
Yes. 2.5 billion. And we think that they are supposed to account. We can't just hear that they are about to lay off through the media a lot of people without them accounting to us. Those are our people, by the way, that will be losing job there. That we cannot just be mum about it. Thanks.
Another question.
Yeah. I'm going to ask the colleagues that they maybe give it a first bite, Makube. I think you may just want to speak to the DRP also. If Mahola can
just have that with ESCOM, maybe Alexco related question. And then Bangani can help us with the NEL related question. And Nobong, you choose the ones you want to give a shot. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the DG. The business rescue process is clear in terms of the Companies Act for a non-public entity. The difficulty or quagmire comes in where it is a public entity that is also governed by the Public Finance Management Act. And as we had indicated, that the PFMA takes precedence from the Companies Act. So if there is a conflict between the Companies Act and the PFMA, then the PFMA will apply. Now, in terms of the Companies Act, once the business rescue practitioner is appointed, it takes the management control of the company. So effectively, the board and the management reports to the business rescue practitioner. However, the shareholder rights still exist. Business rescue does not take away the rights of the minister as the shareholder. The PFMA still applies. The minister is the executive authority in terms of the PFMA,
and the business rescue practitioners must, with in relation to the PFMA, report to the minister. But I think it's also important to indicate that they are an officer of the court. They also, in terms of the Companies Act, reports to the court, and they must give a progress report to the court in terms of the progress of the business rescue. And as we had indicated, the reason why they did not speak is because they are still busy with the business rescue plan. Once they develop that business rescue plan, the Companies Act requires them to publish it, and it becomes a public knowledge. And once it's published, then it goes to a meeting of creditors to be voted on, and if it is accepted, can then be implemented by the business rescue practitioners together with the board and management under the supervision of the shareholder. So what I wanted to clarify is that the shareholder rights still exist. They still report to the minister. It's quite clear. The PFMA Section 54 process will proceed. If they want to cut rules and all that, they must follow that Section 54 process. So they are not the law unto themselves, and the PFMA gives us that comfort of accountability. Thank you.
Thanks, G. On ESCOM.
Sorry, before I give you, and I just want to check with the members that you're satisfied there's no follow up on this thing of the business rescue practitioner.
No, Chair.
Yeah.
But that's
why it becomes difficult, because it will mean for us to get those three guys that were there, we are to go somewhere else, because my understanding is they are not accountable to the department. They are somewhere aloof. You said the court, the way you put it. Mine is, as business rescue people, I don't know whether that confusion won't stand, that don't you find yourself in competition with them? Because I know in a work situation, getting too many instructions, getting it from the different people, they have in fact, according to this, taken over. The board is with them and the management with them, but as the shareholders, then you still have your right. Unfortunately, because we are not practical, we can't see if your rights are being implemented.
Okay, Mkhonazi?
Thanks, Chair. Mine is they're still going to report on SAA.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying the answer.
Department.
The department.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Just to make a follow up from to what Honourable Committee is saying, I think tonight as the committee we will be covered about the shareholders. I hear you said the shareholders' right still exists, so the minister still have a supervision over them. So it must be the minister who must always take this portfolio committee to.
Malinga?
Thank you, Chair. I concur with Honourable Mkhwanazi. The business rescue plan is brought in by the department. So they report to the department. The department, if there are things that even themselves they don't understand, they can drag them to come to the PC, that BRP here. Mara, we are waru DDG, Alendo, he has just explained. Basalindile, basazo yisa in Gupi. Yet 3 months, shoot is linda, need 3 months foot. Basayo ma shareholders, who's over the meeting, kufunyelwane na makreditors, and all that. Hey,
okay, but okay, I wish you to repeat that just explain properly that what this policy, I mean this plan they are gonna be developing. Yeah. Whether it's they're going to take how many months. But also, I want also to include a small question. Do they have power to to pronounce a policy change, you know, even before the shareholder. Like they can just come up in their plan, and could they come up with, do they have power in that plan of the that affects policy changes within SAA?
With regard to the period of the plan is due by the end of this month, February.
Okay.
That's the time that they'll have to then publish it. And then after publishing it and speaking to the stakeholder, including the shareholder, then they can take it to the creditors meeting. Now, in terms of the of the plan, if there will be any policy change, the act is very clear. The shareholder have got the right to reject the plan or propose an alternative plan if the shareholder is not happy with the plan that has been presented by the business rescue practitioner. So we still have rights to be able to make input. In effect, in terms of the law, they are also required to consult with us in the development of the plan. And once the plan is finalized, when we get to the meeting of the creditors and we are not comfortable with that plan, we can then raise our reservations on that plan and ask for that plan to be withdrawn. So the shareholders still have those rights to do that.
Okay. Orders, you're the last person. Is there anyone who's going to have another one?
Just on clarity, if the shareholder can reject the plan, what's the point of putting an entity under business rescue and bringing people in to save the entity if the shareholder can reject the plan?
Okay.
Thank you.
Is a business rescue, as it is anticipated, if you look at the intention of the legislature when it creates this, was that it becomes a consultative process. The shareholder, you own the company. You know, you've got the shares in the company. So you can't come with a plan and say, I'm going to sell 50% of the shares and I don't have a say in that. I can reject it on that basis to say, I mean, you're taking away my shareholding, so you must get my consent with regard to the shareholding of the company.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we continue with other answers. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. Just on Eskom, I think, Deputy Chair, I think the questions that have been asked are quite valid. I think it's right that the committee is concerned by the state of Eskom, because the situation remains quite serious at Eskom. And maybe I should recap from the problem statement to where we are. I think Eskom faces a multitude of problems, and there's a multitude of interventions that we have identified that are being implemented. So from the operational issues in terms of the declining reliability of the generation plant, but also the declining reliability of the transmission and distribution plant, the challenges that we have in terms of air quality and compliance thereof, with the postponements that are coming to an end at the end of March, and whether we will receive the extensions from the environmental affairs and what the impact of that will be. The second part is around the business model of Eskom and the fact that for the first time in decades, consumers have alternatives in terms of how they buy or how they receive their electricity, and that is confronting Eskom's business model of having bulk electricity that is supplied from a single point. So we see the model of electricity provision is changing, and how does Eskom respond to that? The third part is around the financial situation of Eskom, which is driven by the fact that the amount of electricity they're selling is declining over the last decade. Their costs are going up, and also the amount of money they have borrowed in order to build the new power stations, they are unable to have enough money in order to service the debt. And then the third issue is air quality that I've dealt with in the operations. The solution in dealing with Eskom has four parts, and this is out of the turnaround plan that the board had presented in November of 2018, where the board had said that they want an increase in tariffs to reflect the cost of producing electricity. They committed to reducing costs in the business, which required a substantial amount of retrenchments to be taken in the business. And then the third part was around asking government for a debt solution, which at the time they were requesting government to take over 100 billion out of the 450 billion debt that they have. And then the last issue, the board recognized that the business model of Eskom was not sustainable going forward, and they made proposals around restructuring the business model going forward. So you'll recall that the president then appointed an Eskom sustainability team to look at the board's proposal, because the amount of equity support that government that Eskom was asking for, or the debt takeover, was quite substantial. And the Eskom sustainability task team essentially came up with exactly the same recommendation that the board had taken for. To fix Eskom, you must deal with the tariff, you must deal with the cost structure, you must deal with the debt, and you must restructure the business. The fundamental difference between the board and what the task team had recommended was the timing of the restructuring. The Eskom sustainability team was of the view that the restructuring could be done on an immediate basis, while the board was of the view that the unbundling must be done over a period of time, starting with functional unbundling until you split the company into subsidiaries. So since then, government's response firstly was on the tariffs. We have seen that NERSA has given Eskom less tariffs than what they had required. This has created about 150 billion debt, a sort of gap in what Eskom had requested for. So that's the first lever in the turnaround that has not yielded results. Eskom has gone to court to appeal this decision in order for them to close the gap. It's important to mention that if the gap is not closed through the tariff, another lever must be implemented in order to close this gap. The second lever on the cost, government did not support, as you'd recall, the president said there is no support for the retrenchment of 16,000 employees out of Eskom. So the 16,000 employees were going to contribute 13 billion in the cost saving, and the rest of the saving was going to come from coal cost reduction, from IPP contract renegotiation. It was going to come from CAPEX optimization. On the employee cost, the 13 billion has not been achieved because that retrenchments were not supported, but Eskom is embarking on a VSP process in order to exit to reduce the number of people over and above the natural attrition that of about 5% that they achieve every year. On the coal costs, Eskom has embarked on a process to review their contracts, and the bulk of the contracts that have been identified are the contracts that were concluded in 2018 when Eskom was running out of coal. These are the costs that are making what we would call super profits, and that Eskom is negotiating on a bilateral basis. But what this process has also created as a risk is that some of the coal miners then say, if you want to negotiate contracts that are on the upside, we also want to negotiate contracts that are on the downside. So it's going to result as being a give or take that could result in a neutral position for Eskom. But fundamentally going forward, the cost of coal, from what we can see in terms of how the coal industry is performing in the country, is not going to come down, because South Africa has not done any major investment in the coal industry since 2007. So you'll see that we still produce about 270 million tons per year, which we produced in 2007. And this is fundamentally due to the policy uncertainty that we've had in the coal industry. And you'll see that the major coal suppliers in South Africa have exited South Africa. We've seen the exit of Anglo, we've seen the exit of Exxaro is considering exiting South Africa. So we are not seeing the major investments, and this results in Eskom being a price taker in the market, because there is competition with the export market. So they really have to take higher prices if they want to secure the security of supply of coal. So we have to deal with the certainty around mining policy in South Africa in order to have expansion in coal over and above funding issues that we are seeing with capital moving away from coal investment. The second part is on the IPP contracts. You would recall that the ministers of public enterprise and mineral resources did convene the IPP industry, and there has been conversations around how lower tariffs could be achieved, because we recognize that the contracts from bid window 1 to 3 were high on conclusion, and that if you take a 20-year escalation, those contracts are going to end up in a 10 rand per megawatt hour kind of price range, and this will be quite substantial for South Africa, even though the volumes are smaller. So this process is ongoing, and the ministers have committed that this process must be concluded by the end of March. So those are the three key issues in terms of costs and Eskom committing to costs. But I must mention that the downside on the cost side is that while there has been savings that were achieved, I think year to date Eskom has achieved about 6 billion, I stand to be corrected, there has been leakages in terms of the over expenditure on the diesel cost, because the diesel plants are being run over what was initially budgeted in the corporate plan in the beginning of the year. The third issue is on the debt, where the board had asked that government takes over 100 billion of Eskom's debt off their books. Now, this is an important point, because if you look at Eskom's financials at the end of March, they had an EBITDA of about, so at the end of the last year, they had an EBITDA of about 35 billion, and their debt servicing and capital repayments was about 70 billion. So essentially, Eskom cannot afford to pay back, to service the interest, and to repay the capital of the costs of the debt that is required. Now that's why government has made a commitment to support Eskom to ensure that they are able to meet their obligations, while government is making a decision around what a fundamental solution to the debt would be, whether it's the option that has been put on the table by COSATU, or whether it's the option to take the debt onto the sovereign balance sheet. These are options that government must look at, looking at the impact on the sovereign ratings, and also looking at the keeping the fiscal position intact. So that's why, so government has made 49 billion. There was a question that Honorable Waters asked about what are the bailouts going forward. Eskom will receive 49 billion by the end of March 2020. They will receive 59 billion next year, and they will also receive 33 billion in the subsequent years. That is the 33 for 2021-22. That is the extent of the equity support that has been made available, and this was ensure that Eskom remains the going concern during that period while a debt solution is being made. I think it's important to make a clarity point around the difference between the Eskom debt, the debt to the lenders, which is the 450 billion, and the municipal debt. So the 450 billion of debt is money that Eskom has borrowed from lending institutions in order to expand the build program and to build the new stations and to invest in existing stations. So that's the 450 billion. The 39 billion for municipalities is a separate number, which is money that they are not able to collect for electricity that's been sold. Now, on municipal debt, I think it's been quite a difficult for Eskom to resolve on their own. They have come to government to assist in dealing with this problem. If you look at the profile of municipalities that are not paying, these are the same municipalities that are having negative audit outcomes. If you look at the AG's report, so there are fundamental issues in terms of governance on the local government side that are having an impact on Eskom, even though the matter manifests as an Eskom problem. But fundamentally, we have an issue around capacity on local government. Eskom has taken steps in terms of trying to disconnect, so taking a principal decision that actually stated in the PFMA that they will not provide electricity to those municipalities, but they become interdicted and taken to court by various municipalities. We actually had an urgent matter yesterday at 4 o'clock from Letsema Municipality, because Eskom had given them notice to disconnect. So Eskom is really constrained in terms of the levers that they can pull to deal with the municipal debt, other than making a decision up front to not provide electricity to those areas, which would negatively impact customers that sit in those municipalities and are actually paying for their electricity bill. So it's quite a complex issue for them to deal on their own. Government has had a ministerial task team for the last year or two, but it has really raised a lot of critical policy issues that government need to deal with around the distribution as a sector. But on an ongoing basis, in terms of the amount of that Eskom is able to recoup on an ongoing basis, it has not really had a positive impact. There was a question asked about whether the chair, the new chair, the acting chair, is effective in terms of dealing with the issue. I think the president did make the announcement that, you know, the chair would be interim, but that in the short term he would make, there would be an announcement around strengthening the board. I think you'd recall that this board was appointed in January of 2018, and at the time there was a lot of focus around dealing with governance. If you look at the skills matrix we have on the board versus the resignations that we've had, we have about 5 vacancies now on the board. You'd see that there is a need for a new mix of skills that are required in order to deal with the ESCOM problems as they are. So we expect that cabinet and the ministers would make a decision around a new board for ESCOM and to deal with the issues as they are. On the issue of the roadmap, so firstly, this is the special paper as announced by the president to give an outlook of what it will take to unbundle ESCOM going forward. I think we did make a presentation in November last year to the committee around the various aspects of the paper, but I think it will be appropriate that we come back at some point to provide progress, not just on the paper, but on the overall turnaround to the issues that I've mentioned in a written presentation on an update, to provide you an update of where we are and whether we are being impactful, but to also impress that the situation does remain very delicate where ESCOM is concerned. It's important that all the levers that I've mentioned are implemented simultaneously in order for us to effectively deal with the ESCOM problems. So there is no space to deal with the one issue and not deal with other aspects of the problem. Chair, I think I've covered the issues in relation to ESCOM.
Okay. I want us to wrap on ESCOM quickly. Is there any follow-up on that? Okay.
Can I make a proposal, say that the roadmap update be the standard item? Because I think to me it is very important to enable us to be able to play an oversight on the issue, because ESCOM, I'm not saying because I'm more interested in that, but ESCOM, if you compare to all the SOEs, ESCOM is the one who's giving us, the sleepless night. And if we can get an ongoing update or looking on those, but also on the issue of debt.
Malima?
Angibonge sihlalo ukuthi the respondent was concurring to my statement. Yeah, ibonga le clarity ukuthi 450 billion is from the lenders. Mm. But it does not assist ESCOM to pursue a 39 billion whereas they owe 450 billion. Does not make sense, business sense to me.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the bailout, I know that you mentioned 59 billion for next year. Is that just for ESCOM or for all the SOEs? Thanks.
Thank you.
Sincere apologies. But there was a comment by Honorable Malinga that was not covered. Whether we passed that for the 18th to 20 March meeting. I think we need to have a guidance. The issue of the contributions that is dominating the news, the pension fund bailing out ESCOM. I think we need to get the, because it was mentioned here, so we cannot just leave it as.
Thank you, Chair. So on the question of the, I take the first two items as comments that we made. On the bailout, so in terms of the Special Appropriation Act that was approved last year, the 59 billion is for ESCOM only. Yeah. So on the question around the pension fund. So in terms of the 450 billion that Eskom owes, there is a number of ways in which we can deal with that debt. So government can decide to give Eskom the 450 billion to go and settle all the lenders, or they can take the 450 billion and make it part of Eskom's sort of government 3 trillion rand debt, which would bring debt to GDP close above 60%, close to 70% in the next 3 years. Or we can look at getting equity partners. So somebody else brings their money that would settle those lenders, but they get shareholding in the business. So there's a variety of options that can be considered in order for us to reduce the 450 billion. We can sell some of the assets at Eskom to raise money in order to settle those assets. So these are the options that are being considered in relation to the debt. So the question around the pension that COSATU had proposed was that can they put money into Eskom as private equity in exchange for shareholding for Eskom, and then they would therefore get a dividend that gets paid out to the shareholders. So effectively that would make pension fund holders, dividend holders, in sort of equity shareholders in Eskom. So obviously there's a variety of things that the current shareholder has to consider in terms of, you know, what are the objectives, what are the policy guiding principles in choosing the appropriate options, what is the fiscal position of government in terms of our ability to choose some of the levers that may be available. So the COSATU pension fund issue is but one of the options in dealing with the Eskom debt, but we have not yet come to a point of decision on whether that would be the appropriate choice for us to make, and what would be the preconditions for that equity. You know, for example, if pension fund holders currently hold debt at Eskom and they actually get their debt on the return on debt that gets paid out to them, if they switch to equity, are they going to get a return as equity holders in the business? Or what is the timeline? Is it a 10-year view that's given? So I think it's an ongoing conversation, but I think the principle here is we have to find a fundamental solution to Eskom's debt, and it's quite urgent that we're able to do so, because the period of time that government has provided equity to Eskom was to provide enough time for government to weigh up those options and to actually make a choice on that. So I don't know, you know, perhaps COSATU would be amenable to come in and present what their proposal is, but from a government perspective, you know, we would look at all the options that are currently available.
Yeah. I'm not going to give in on Eskom now, otherwise we won't move. Mm. Can we go further to another one?
If I may,
before we move off Eskom, I think that the issue of municipal debt and the issue of loans that were raised to build the new power stations that we have, another capital program, I think we need to make a distinction between those two, because conflating those two is very dangerous. Because if we go out in the public arena, and this is a public arena that we are in, and we are conflating those two, we are actually giving people a license not to pay. We raise the money from lending institutions because the government does not have enough capital to invest in these infrastructure programs. And that money is raised on the basis that the users will pay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we allow politics to come into this space and we give license to people not to pay, the infrastructure investment program that the president has said is required to revive this economy will not be possible. And I think it's important that and this point the minister has made it, that the political leadership need to help us out here. As we go out into the communities, we cannot be ambiguous. We need to encourage our people to pay. Those who cannot pay, there's free basic electricity that is available for them. But we know what is happening in the municipalities, that is not going to the right recipients. Or we have people who can afford to pay, like we have in Soweto. who are hiding behind staying with pensioners. So I think that message needs to be very clear, that the two are not related at all. Else we are creating a problem for ourselves and our country, and the effort that we said is needed to revive this economy.
I don't want to give us so, otherwise there will be a lot. Yeah. We are continuing. This is not an end of this discussion. We'll have them on the next session. Yeah. On the, I think on Denel now. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe the first is to clarify that the loss is cumulative. It's not per quarter. It's cumulative. So we're expecting that we'll be between 1.4 and 1.6 at year end. So the number is a cumulative number. So in terms of the contracts that we indicated on the slides, actually the board has taken a decision that they will not execute any contract that does not yield a profit margin of a minimum of 7%. So this contract has gone through that washing machine to check whether are we going to make money out of this contract, and indeed the margins are within the policy of the board. So it was there was due diligence in taking up this contract. Actually, this is one of the, good contracts for Denel, so to speak, because there are no counter trade expectation or offset expectation where if they buy from us, we must go and build something in Egypt. Actually, they just want the systems to go and use, and they are paying 700 million on R&D, the Egyptians, and the Denel will own the IP that comes from that contribution, 700 million. So it means Denel will be able to not only sell that product to the Egyptians, they can sell it to anyone. There are no strings attached to that to that effect. So on the issue of delivery, the Chad contract, I think it's another clarification that we have to give as well, is to say, and it's linked to the board's policy on margins. When the board assessed the contract, they checked, they said, no, for us to collect 100 rand from that contract, or to make 100 rand from the contract, we have to spend 125 rand. Doesn't make sense. So the board made the decision to say, this is a loss-making contract from day one. We're not going to execute it. So the delivery is not about them failing to deliver. It's them assessing the viability of the contract and taking a decision that we're not going ahead with the contract. Whatever prepayments that we received from the client, we're going to return the money to the client. We're not executing the contract because it's a loss-making contract. It's against the very same policy that I've mentioned. So on the issue of Chad, Chair, and in fact, it's one of the contracts that created problems for Denel, where you have got technical agents given money up front, even before the first welding of the vehicle is done, the technical advisor has pocketed 7 million rand from that. And the board has taken legal steps to try and recoup that 7 million rand. So it's not a performance issue. It's a policy issue coming out of the board. So on the issue of the recapitalization shortfall of 1 billion, whether that 1 billion would have rescued Denel, it depends on a number of factors. I was reminded that the Royal Falk helicopter is 30 years old today, this year. 30 years old. It's quite an achievement, but there's a problem. I don't know the next generation. If there's a plan for the next generation aircraft, So we are running this system, but we're not sure whether we're going to upgrade it. We're going to make a new generation altogether. There's no plan. Remember, this is the plan that Dinel cannot do. It's a, the user, which is the South African National Defense Force, must make a pronouncement on, and then Dinel start the process. So they cannot just do an aircraft without who's going to buy it. So the buyer must first make a commitment to say in 10 years I want to have this flying, and then Dinel will kickstart the process. So those are some of the things that are hampering the progress in the company. In fact, I make the Royal Falcon, as if we are not careful, it will be like another ESCOM, in a sense that when we finally make the decision to build the aircraft, there will be no people to build the aircraft, because the knowledge, the people who build the first aircraft, I mean, I'm saying the aircraft is 30 years old today. You can imagine how old are the people who build the aircraft. So it means at some point we'll want to build an aircraft, but we'll never have the people to build the aircraft. So that's we have got this closing window to make such decisions. And it's not only on the Royal Park, there are other systems as well that will need decisions now, so that we are able to preserve those. And there's an issue of regulations as well. Dinel is an odd company if you compare with other defense companies elsewhere in the world. We export 60% plus of our output, whereas internationally companies depend on their local defense force. So the 80% of their income is from the local market, and then 20% they get it from exports. So our regulations, our arms export regulations, are also a bit difficult to in supporting not only Dinel but the local companies in the defense space. I mean, we had an issue of end user certificates that have not been approved for some time. Meaning, if you don't have an end user certificate, you cannot, even if you have a contract, you cannot ship the consignment across. It's illegal. You can go to jail for that. So the system or the policy on end user certificate is also a bit difficult in supporting the local companies. So you can get the injection, but if you cannot ship your product, remember, you depend on exports. If the exporting infrastructure is not up to date, you will only build things that just create inventories for yourself. So that's one. Two, the local defense budget is also not going anywhere, meaning it can no longer support Dinel and other companies. The company have to look elsewhere for support. I mean, the special defense account, which is used mainly for acquisition, is stopping this year. So it means there will be no visibility on acquisition from the part of the defense force. So that creates additional uncertainty in planning for companies such as Dinel. Market access. We speak of Dinel as among the seven countries, or South Africa is among the seven countries that can design, develop, and produce a missile. Seven in the world. But accessing markets is dominated by the big guys. So Dinel can only access a few markets. So then how do we have to make a decision, how as a country do we position this company to be able to access markets? So that's a policy decision, and it talks to the strategy that the company is trying to put in place, where the issue of foreign ownership in the business, SEPs, selling what they consider as non-core, but that we must have appetite as a government to say, do we allow foreign ownership in Denel. That's a decision that must be taken at an executive level to say. But the board, the position of the board has been presented to minister to say, this is how we see ourselves creating a viable Denel. It's there, and the minister would, I think he has taken a decision to consult with cabinet, because remember you have the defense review that classified Denel as a strategic national security asset with sovereign capabilities that are critical for the country. So perhaps the decision on what to do with certain parts of Denel may need broader government consensus, effectively. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Now, Bono, you want to speak to some of the corporate questions on DPE? That program 2 and vacancies, do you want to speak to those? But at, yeah, while she compiles the presentation, Chair, let me just say, she's the head of our strategy unit.
Okay.
Yeah. Chair, the cost drivers on program 2, obviously people costs are the main cost drivers within the department. And obviously the issues that we have raised with regard to vacancies are directly linked to that. The SOE bill, the question that was raised on that, we have opted to use one of the multilateral organizations to help us to draw that up. The contracting has proven to be a nightmare. So an alternative strategy is required on our side to deal with that. Namcon, I think it's, we hope that's one of the areas that will be laid to rest at least within this MTF period. The deed of settlement, the progress, all the activities linked to that have been completed, except obviously the rehabilitation of the area will take a while, and there is adequate funding for that. And going forward, the handing over of the town, that's one of the last things that need to be done with regard to deed of settlement. But of course now we find ourselves in a situation which the entity finds itself in that its own ability to, as Alex told, to deliver will be very much dependent on the restructuring of ALESCO and PSGF going forward. On the issue of Transnet, I'm dealing with Mam Connor's questions. On the issue of Transnet performance, and the fact that we are surfacing these issues shows that, you know, there is effort that is being put into that. I mean, on the ports, the minister and the team were in Durban in December last year. We have a team led by one of our chief directors that has with some of the ports managers that tracks the commitments that the business has made to ourselves and to the business communities to address things that we're dealing with that. The administrator performance, we have given the administrator very specific deliverables, and this was mainly informed by the amount of money that is still available to support ALESCO Johannesburg operations, to say collapse the entity, come up with the new operating model for the mine, the current contract mining model is not working well for us. We need to have a look in terms of the share of the profits. I mean, we are the mining rights holders, so it's important that those rights remain. At least they seem to be benefiting government and the communities instead of contractors who mainly are not from the Rustersfeld area. The repurposing of so there's a few ideas with regard to SAD. We'll see that what the business rescue plan comes up with. One of those is combine the MRO facilities with those of Denel and SAX, and reposition it really to be the primary aircraft maintenance repair and overhaul facility for the whole of government. That is all because that government, if you look at the sand parks, the SAPS, the Portnet, and so on, there's quite a significant fleet of government that can support such a facility. As chefs, I spoke to it earlier to say that it has a capability that can be utilized beyond the airlines industry, and within the airlines industry, it's already had a quite significant clientele from the foreign airliners that fly into the country. Going to Member Waters' questions, so yeah, vanity project. I think, Chair, to a large extent, you have dealt with that. I think we know that post-World War II, the Afrikaner poverty problem was primarily addressed by the SOEs. We have a black problem today in terms of poverty, inequality, and other ills that plague our people. And you have said very clearly in the NDP that the SOEs shall be the vehicles of delivery. Cannot be when they are supposed to be telling us for that certainly they will need to be sold. And to whom anyway, because our people don't have money. The losses that you've reported on the entities that do not have that have not produced annual reports is obviously coming from the management reports that they share with us. We have made those figures so that there is visibility. Obviously, these are not audited numbers. We're hoping coming out of this business review process will have a baseline which can be audited and we can move forward from that. Dealt with SAX with regard to that question. I think Member Lingla, the roadmap question has been answered. The BRP issue has also been answered. I think the issue around the network strategy, which routes are we coming out of, and the announcements unfortunately should have been qualified. And that is not a final decision as to which routes the airline, the new, the restructured SAA will be operating. It was intended to stem the losses so that the post-commencement funding that had been provided can last a lot longer. That was really the reason behind the announcement of the BRP. Could have been handled a lot better, and our statement from at the time reflected that, because the minister did it clear that there has to be consultation on this particular issue. I can assure the committee, Noah Linga, the supervision of Transnet from the department with the limited resources that we have is quite robust. The quarterly, there's a proper analysis of the reports we get from them. We do side visits to ensure that the figures that you get are realistic. And the minister gets roped in where we believe there's a need to do so. Let's wait for the final business rescue plan that will tell us in terms of the routes we have permits for, how those are going to be dealt with. The issue of Durban has been raised quite strongly, including by the premier in the province. We really believe if you are flying the right aircraft into that part of the world, you have the right load factors, you can run a profitable service on that line. Unfortunately, the reality of it, and sometimes this gets missed, Chair, and I think you've put it quite well, is that these businesses were hollowed out. These businesses, through corruption, state capture, and capable people being kicked out, ended in that this hole. And sometimes things get worse before they get better, and that's where we find ourselves with here. I've spoken to Transnet performance, the denial issues, Mango is not under business rescue. As Express now is under business rescue. I mean, the issue of management is across our SOEs. We're asking what needs to be done.
bureaucrats don't run the businesses. We have to make sure we get capable people to run the business, and we have to start hiring for the right reasons. And this that basically applies across the board. Let's get the best people we can find to run our institutions. If we do not emphasize that particular point, but obviously the people need to also understand what is it that the state is seeking to achieve. So they need to be aligned in terms of the priorities of government. But technical capability cannot be substituted, and more so at an executive level, because the ultimate day-to-day operations of a business is informed by that. We have noted the comments with regard to ALESCO that the administrator was intended to have the power over the CEO. It's not supposed to be two bulls in a call here. It's supposed to be a bigger bull. That's why they were brought in. That's why we've got to the mine. He was able to act based on the forensic report that we had commissioned, which has been concluded. Chair, we have noted your request that the report must make its way here. So we will definitely bring that to the attention of the minister. The overall department strategy we have addressed governance, but we have seen it's not enough. That's why I say management becomes important. Of course, the SOEs must also be properly capitalized, not only to address the recent challenges, but also historically some of these SOEs were not, like for instance, the case in point is SAA when it was taken out of Transnet. It was not properly capitalized. It's also been on the back foot for quite some time as well. I mean, recently we had the discussions with the DOT DG, and he raised a similar issue to Prasa. To when Prasa was taken out, the then rail community company, it was not properly capitalized. For instance, some of the assets that are critical to its operation remain in Transnet. So those are the things that we need to address. Chair, we have noted your questions, your comment with regard to the shareholder presence, the Alaska's administrator issues to a large extent have addressed that. The administrator report definitely does the intention to table it here. We gave him a very clear work scope when he went in. And we're holding him accountable to that in terms of ensuring he delivers on those items. And we're using the levers at our disposal to do that. Transnet, it is not loss-making, and we believe with the new CEO that has come in and we've had management appointments, we should see the business improving going forward. The reality of it as well is that the productivity and efficiency wise, Transnet has not been doing that well over the years. I mean, there's always been complaints around administered prices, for instance, that the prices go up but they are not matched by efficiencies from the business. This is your typical monopoly behavior that you're seeing with Transnet, and we need to address that. And one of the areas that you have to deliver on by the end of this calendar year is the corporatization of TNPA. Because what has been noted is that the profits that are generated in TNPA that are supposed to go towards investment in the ports and show their effectiveness has been making its way into the other divisions of Transnet. So that the cabinet has made a very clear directive to see in terms of the MTSF, this must be done by the end of this calendar year. So we're working on that. The comment you made on damage to SOE, that is welcomed, Chair. Let me stop there.
Thank you. Honourable members, thank you so much. This was our longest for a long time. but understandable. I think let's close the meeting. Thank you very much for your contribution and your presence. Hope to see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.